for WMRA News. I'm Bob Levickin. Virginia's governor issues a stay-at-home order through early June. We check in with the mayors of Harrisonburg and Stanton on how their communities are coping with the COVID-19 outbreak. And one activist group in Rockbridge County is working now to connect people into a network to help one another during the pandemic. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, March 31st. The number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Virginia has surpassed 1,000 as of Tuesday morning. 25 people in Virginia have died from COVID-19, with 1,020 cases now confirmed, and more than 12,000 people in Virginia have been tested for the coronavirus. Those numbers prompted Governor Ralph Northam to issue a statewide stay-at-home order for all Virginians through June the 10th. Virginia Public Radio's Mallory O'Payne reports, beginning with a statement from the governor.
Do not go out unless you need to go out. This is very different from wanting to go out.
According to the text of the order, Virginians are allowed to leave home for essential shopping, visiting the home of a family member, outdoor exercise, getting medical help, or volunteering. Certain activities, like gathering in a group of more than 10 people or sunbathing on a beach, now carry a misdemeanor charge. Northam says people ignoring these guidelines are being selfish.
Because you are putting all of us, especially our health care providers, at risk. And so to date, this has been a suggestion to Virginians. Today, it's an order.
Virginia joins more than 24 other states also forcing residents to stay home, including Maryland, West Virginia, and North Carolina. I'm Mallory O'Payne.
Governor Northam's order also applies to all higher education institutions, which must halt any in-person instruction. That includes Liberty University in Lynchburg, which initially declined to stop all on-campus teaching. The Evangelical College in Lynchburg, led by President Jerry Falwell Jr., has faced intense criticism over its decision to welcome students back to campus last week after their spring break. Most colleges and universities in Virginia went to online instruction and ordered students off campus earlier in March. At least 3 Liberty students have been tested for COVID-19, the school said in a statement on Monday. Every day, the Virginia Department of Health updates its latest figures on the spread of the novel coronavirus, but those numbers tell an incomplete story about the spread of the disease. Ben Pavier with our partner station VPM in Richmond reports.
In Virginia, the number of confirmed COVID-19 cases has quadrupled in the last week, but it's still an undercount. Alex Crist is a professor of medicine at VCU. He's also a primary care doctor in Fairfax.
Those numbers of what's being reported is just the tip of the iceberg.
Chris says he's seen a growing number of patients with respiratory problems.
They might have a headache, chest pain, even some shortness of breath, and fevers and aches. So people are pretty scared about what's going on right now.
In some cases, Chris is confident he's seen a COVID-19 infection, but he can't know for sure without a test, and they're in short supply.
To date, we've mainly reserved testing for people where it's going to change the type of care that we provide.
Chris is concerned that the Washington, D.C. area may be harder hit than we currently understand. It's close to New York and has flights across the world.
It could very well be kind of a next epicenter for cases of coronavirus. And we should be testing people and trying to track this to try and curb the spread.
Virginia ranks in the bottom third of testing per capita, according to a VPM analysis of COVID-19 data. State officials say the federal government prioritized harder hit states like New York for testing. But testing has increased. On Monday, the state reported results from 1,400 new tests, up from 360 a week before. Dr. Lori Furlano is Deputy Commissioner for Population Health at the department. She says it's not unusual to have incomplete information on the spread of infectious diseases.
In things like respiratory illness, flu, for example, we do the best to capture as much of the case counts as we can and then make estimates.
The daily coronavirus numbers produced by the state only include people who've been tested. But Furlano says the state is also tracking times when doctors diagnose someone with COVID-19, but don't actually test them.
We collect information on visits to emergency rooms and urgent care centers around the Commonwealth.
State officials can then use this data to look for trends, searching for words like cough or COVID.
So it's a rougher system, but it's pretty remarkable how it almost always tracks the way we would expect it to.
The department's data shows about 4% of patients admitted to Virginia's emergency rooms last week showed symptoms of coronavirus, like fever with a cough. That's more than double the number from February. At some point, this so-called syndromic surveillance might be done digitally, according to Madhav Murata. He's a professor in biocomplexity at the University of Virginia.
You can imagine apps on your phones where you essentially press a button every day saying were you feeling sick or not.
Murata says this sort of crowdsourcing may be critical to understanding pandemics, but the data will never be perfect.
So even trying to tell what the correct number today is a scientific challenge because of measurement errors, because everybody doesn't report it at that time, because of coding errors.
Still, there's more data than ever before and more computer power to analyze it. For example, Murata's team has tracked whether airport closures have helped slow the spread of the disease. He says this kind of data-driven analysis is still relatively new.
So we have made tremendous progress as a society to be able to even talk about it in this manner.
Murata and the Biocomplexity Institute are working with the state to build models to predict the spread of COVID-19. At least one model has already come out. Researchers at the University of Washington found Virginia could suffer over 2,000 deaths, with a peak in mid-May. But like everything else with the coronavirus, those estimates may change quickly.
That's Ben Pavier with VPM reporting. Yesterday, WMRA reached out to two local mayors, Stanton's Carolyn Dull and Harrisonburg's Dina Reed, and asked them how they see the state of things today, what challenges they anticipate in the coming weeks, and where they see hope. Here's what they had to say.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Dull, mayor of the city of Stanton, Virginia. We have just been notified of our first case of testing positive for the COVID-19 virus. That's certainly causing some uneasiness with constituents, and I would guess that we will be seeing more confirmed cases. We are doing some things from the city to try to alleviate the pain of our small businesses. We are a small business-oriented city. So we have taken steps to relieve interest and late payment fees and not require payments on some taxes until later in the spring and summer to try to give this a chance to work its way through our system. And we have encouraged everyone to get exercise out in this, in the parks and in their yards and walking on their street, but maintaining the physical social distancing to try to keep us as safe as possible. So the challenges that we anticipate over the next week or two, frankly, would be the probable increase in positive COVID cases. And I'd say the challenges further ahead are that we are a city that have May elections, and the governor has already recommended everyone doing absentee ballots. So we're trying to get the word out to folks that they can apply online for an absentee ballot. They can go down to our parking garage and call the registrar. They will meet them out there. They can vote in person absentee now. And I would say, what gives me real hope about our city is that we do have a community here. It was almost instantaneous that groups started forming to get together on social media and try to figure out how to help other people and to let people know how to get what they needed and to check on each other and make sure that the elderly and disabled are doing okay. And there's nothing better than that. I am so proud of our citizens for stepping up instantly in that case. And I think that will help people to weather this storm because we'll get through this and we will come out the other side stronger.
I'm Dina Reed, Mayor of Harrisonburg. This is a difficult time for many in our community, but I have been encouraged about how our residents and businesses have come together to support one another and stay Harrisonburg strong. It is important that we stay at home. That is the only way that we're going to be able to manage this. And I know it's difficult. I know it's difficult to just stay at home. I know we're getting hit hard with our local small businesses. We can't hang out at our restaurants like we would normally do and enjoy you know, having a good meal inside. But we can order out and take it home and or have it delivered or go buy a gift card to still support our local businesses and restaurants. It's just a new normal just for now, but that's what we need to do to keep each other safe. You know, our challenges are the same as every other city and county in America right now. We have to continue providing those essential city services and support our local businesses, community as much as we can. And I, like I said before, I know it can be difficult for people to have faith right now in these situations. But it's important that we take the responsibility of each other. And so I know the weather is nice. You know, it's spring, but we need to follow those recommendations that Governor Northam has put out for us to follow. I love this community. That's one reason why, you know, I am so proud to be mayor of my hometown. The messages of support and unity that I've seen has shown me the true meaning of the friendly city. I've seen many people organize in their neighborhoods to help the elderly so that they wouldn't have to come out and go to the grocery stores or pick up medicines. That's what we do. Plenty of folks are coming together and making donations to our local community foundation and our local United Way. People are gathering food and taking it to the food banks. Our residents, our community, our people, that's what gives me hope. And that's what I know that as long as we are working together, we're going to get through this together.
That was Harrisonburg Mayor Dena Reed, preceded by Stanton Mayor Carolyn Dull, discussing current conditions under COVID-19 in their respective cities. On Monday, the president of the Board for Open Doors in Harrisonburg announced that a building at James Madison University is being converted into housing for the homeless. Graham Witt said that JMU and the city are working with the shelter agency to house the homeless in Godwin Hall's gymnasium. An activist group called 50 Ways Rockbridge is working to connect people into a network to help one another during the COVID-19 pandemic. WMRA's Mike Tripp reports.
Research, Educate, Act is a slogan on the website 50 Ways Rockbridge, a group of concerned citizens from Rockbridge County working together on major political issues. But these days, the cause is not political.
In the past 10 days, as the COVID-19 pandemic has become more and more acute, our board decided that we had the infrastructure to at least offer some kind of help.
Board member Ellen Mayock says that's done through the 50 Ways Rockbridge website.
And so anybody in the community could fill it out to either offer their services or request help in some form.
Of course, not everyone has internet.
Or people can call 801-609-HELP.
They also created a Facebook group. Mayock says the response on the website has been inspiring.
Since we just opened that up about a week ago, now we have over 100 volunteers and we've had about 15 to 20 individual requests for help.
And how are people helping?
As of right now, people are offering to deliver groceries, medical supplies, or to ensure that people who are living alone are doing okay. And we believe that we might need more people to be willing to make phone calls to do phone check-in on the elderly, the infirm, and or people who are alone.
For WMRA News, I'm Mike Tripp.
Organizers of the Equip Seaville Drive say they have received tens of thousands of personal protective equipment items, that's PPE, since they began collecting supplies for frontline healthcare workers. From partner station VPM, Charles Fishburne reports.
So I want to show you how to do this.
Brian Calhoun is using his guitar shop to make face shields and showing others how to do it on Facebook.
Take a piece of plastic.
He has made hundreds of them as part of an effort by Charlottesville area doctors and nurses who launched an emergency supply drive last week. Dr. Paige Perriello is a pediatrician who helped launch the drive.
Getting protective equipment to our frontline healthcare workers is critical during this unprecedented pandemic.
Construction companies are giving masks, dentists, gowns, and head covers. Crime scene investigators are donating full body suits. They are taking donations at supportseaville.com/equipseaville. Charles Fishburne, WMRA News.
Finally today, many industries having a hard time right now are seeking help from the federal government That includes the coal industry in Virginia. From Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
When the economy started crumbling because of the novel coronavirus pandemic, leaders in the coal industry responded by asking Congress to reduce their liability. Specifically, they'd like to see the black lung excise tax cut in half, reducing the amount of money flowing into a fund that's already $4 billion in debt. Harry Childress at the Virginia Coal and Energy Alliance says his industry needs the help.
We're going through tough times. Companies are going bankrupt. This contributes to people probably going bankruptcy, to people making less profit, be able to stay in business, to try to capitalize equipment, to try to hire new people, to work more hours.
Michael Maragos at Taxpayers for Common Sense says the coal industry is trying to take advantage of the economic crisis.
We think their attempt right now is just appalling. It's completely unjustified to take advantage of this crisis to try and push forward things that have been on the industry's lobbying agenda for years.
The $2 trillion stimulus package approved by Congress did not include a reduction in the coal industry's responsibility to pay into the Black Lung Trust Fund. But leaders in the coal industry say they'll continue to press members of Congress to cut that excise tax in half. I'm Michael Pope.
NPR has supplied a permanent link to live coverage from the White House. That is on our website, WMRA.org, and on the WMRA app. It's the first tile under the coronavirus podcast feed. And tonight and every weeknight on WMRA at 9 o'clock, it's NPR's show about the coronavirus pandemic, the national conversation on WMRA. It's tonight and every weeknight at 9. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected. And do enjoy your Tuesday.